Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, hackers hold HBO hostage, Uber looks for a new CEO, and Game of Thrones is still popping. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
You can fuck with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red
Cardi
bottoms.
B. CB. I can get them both. I can tell you, I'm not knowing about Cardi B in this way.
Hey man, she got a hot record out.
I thought she was just kind of like just a reality star, like trying to. I didn't know that she was really like spitting, like coming with some heat.
I mean, this record is picking up a lot of rotation, man. A lot of momentum. Okay. A lot of people like this record.
The productions go. Yeah. Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech. This is show we break down tech news, nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined as always, except for last week, but as always, by my man Akili Shine. What's happening?
What's happening, man?
How you doing?
I'm good, man.
Good.
We out here living large, baby. Yes. How you doing?
I'm actually fantastic. I'm doing great.
Yes, sir.
I'm alive. Things are good. Could be a lot worse.
Hey, man. Count your blessings, man.
Exactly. Could be a lot worse in a lot of different ways.
That's right.
I'm very, very happy. Last week, when you were here, I did talk about, and I just want to retouch it slightly, I did talk about all the movies, because I did see the three big movies, and I saw a fourth one Monday, which I want to talk
about. Which one did you see?
Well, I saw, I did get to see Dunkirk, which we talked about.
Yep.
And, yeah, I did see it in the...
You saw it in the 70, so 70 millimeter?
I saw it in the 70 IMAX joint
okay.
at the Chinese
theater.
All right,
theater. Show off.
The IMAX 70 millimeter film print
okay.
at the Chinese theater, like center row. Like, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. That was a fantastic film. I, you know, the criticism with the film about the narrative and the lack of story development, it just kind of like drops you in there and roll. It just feels like it kind of drops you in the middle of Dunkirk and rolls cameras.
Right. I heard that as well. No,
really
like
you,
deep character development.
Yeah, doesn't care who anybody is, doesn't care what their backstory is.
Right.
It's just kind of like, I'm here and showing you these four or five points of view.
And it's cracking.
He manipulates timelines,
right.
But it's just masterful filmmaking at the highest level.
The cinematography you're saying is masterful.
All of it. The storytelling and cinematography and just every single thing he's doing. Obviously, maybe if you want a different type of movie for screenplay and get to know these characters, I think it'd be a masterpiece if there were really some stronger character development.
So cinematography heavy versus like narrative heavy versus
yeah,
like dialogue
for sure.
heavy.
For sure. I mean, the dialogue is just in service of kind of what, you know, that's a plane. It's a boat.
Okay.
You know, the dialogue's in service of when you be in the middle of the war.
Right.
And it's really, I mean, it's literally like, he just dropped a bunch of cameras in the middle of the war from multiple points, from air, sea, and land.
Hmm.
So it's air, sea, land. You got the war. You got Dunkirk. That's all I need to know. And
what were the other ones?
Other ones I saw Apes.
Okay.
Apes. Well, let me go back to that. I saw Atomic Blonde.
Nice.
Atomic Blonde, really a lot of fun. It had one sequence, which I just think is one of the most spectacular fight sequences I've seen. I really can't remember. I'd have to really do a deep dive and think about ranking these fight sequences, but I just don't know how they shot this.
Hmm.
I really don't know where they put the camera. I need you to see it. I need you to tell me like how they shot this fight sequence, because it's handheld and it's real camera. It's not all digital, not computer moved. It's you're inside of a fight for a long ass time, and the choreography.
That's dope.
It's either like expert choreography, and I don't know because the camera's
so it's low. like better than some John Wick sequences.
I mean, the thing about the John Wicks, I would say the difference between the John Wick sequences and the Atomic Blonde sequences is, although, you know, the same director did the first one, and there was a duo that did the first one,
right?
And then one of the dudes went to John Wick 2, and the other dude did this one. I think you can tell they're different styles. This guy's more, one guy's more of a gunplay guy, and one guy's more of a
fight sequence.
A hand-to-hand guy. Yeah. Yeah. So one guy is more of a car and gunplay. This guy is like a fight and gunplay.
Hey, that's a good compliment.
So John Wick 2 had a lot of the gunplay and fight and car stuff. This is just close quarter, hand-to-hand.
Combat.
A lot of combat.
Catch
but
the
like
fade.
Slow, catch the fade. Not like, you know, cartoon, you know, style, but just like really
just barbaric,
but also like
scrap.
True, because Charlize Theron is a 40-year-old woman, and like how would she like
whoop
ass on these big 6'2", 6'3" dudes? And it's realistic. It's not like, you know, you see on some movies, on some Angelina Jolie movies, she's like, punch the guy in the face, and she's just like, ah, that hurt. Or like on some, you know, Scarlett Johansson stuff, you know, which this is like, felt realistic. Anyway, point that I'm making is just there's a sequence, it's a very close quarters fight scene that lasts, you know, a pretty long time. And it's just, I'm just equally in awe of where they put the camera and how they shot this as I am with what I was watching.
Awesome.
Like I need to go back. It's worth the entire price of admission for that one fight sequence because it's incredible.
Incredible.
Anyway, so there's that. And then Apes, I don't know, man. I don't know what, all three of these movies made me feel like movies. It made me feel like, fuck Netflix, fuck, you know, HBO, because all three of these films made me feel like this is the shit you can only go to the movies to see. Because Apes, again, the effects, the acting, like the whole time, instead of just being taken out of the movie, like being like, oh, this is a bunch of apes, I was like, I can't believe that these aren't real. I can't believe that none of what I'm watching is real.
Right.
It's all CG. Like it's my brain refused to believe it.
Right.
Not just with the visually, like what I'm seeing with the hair and movement and everything. I'm talking about the acting, the motion capture. Okay. So strong.
And what was the fourth one?
The fourth one I saw at a screening with the director and the producers, Megan Ellison and Catherine Bigelow, and it was Detroit.
Nice.
Man, it's, you know, I saw my partner Steve Barry, and he's, you know, we're a little split on the movie. I liked it a little more than he did. He's not much of a fan of Bigelow's style.
Okay.
Although he respects it. And he's also not a fan of Mark Ball, the screenwriter's writing, which is...
How did our boy do?
Boyega was... He was fired. Boyega was like, good. He's the truth.
Good, yeah.
Like, I don't know, man. Like, his accent was on point. Like, I believed him.
Good.
Like, I was wondering how he, a man of 2017, a British man of 2017, could put himself in the African-American experience of 1967. It's not very hard. It's not very easy to do when you don't have the... You don't have the cultural references, the social references. I mean, he didn't grow up with, you know.
Yeah, but that argument, I don't know. I don't think you have to have those references. The world is smaller because of the internet. You know how people live.
Absolutely.
But you study people based on what you read, what you watch anyway.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, clearly, because yeah. he killed it. And so does Idris when he does, you know, when he nailed a Baltimore accent in The Wire.
Exactly.
And nailed the accent American Gangster. Idris is good in that. But my point is that I just feel like there's certain things that are true to African American experience that you just have by having uncles.
The job of an actor, aunties,
and fathers.
The job
and
of an actor though is to study, do a character study. So that's,
sure.
I mean, you play a murderer. Like you don't have to grow up around killers and drug dealers. You know what I'm saying?
I just wonder if it's, and this happens all the time. Look, people go in and do the, you know, play. You know, I'm royalty. I'm a cultural thing that I've never experienced that before. And maybe it's naive of me to wonder about how John Boyega is going to do, because I thought his accent in Star Wars is a little wonky. But I think that's just the character he's playing. But he is on point in this one. He is really on point.
That's excellent.
I he's really
great. Well, hats off to him.
Hats off to him, and hats off to all. I think the cast was great. The movie was great. It's one of these things where you just tell a story. You know, not going on. No.
Yes.
Sorry.
let's just cover movies today.
No, but last thing I'll say is it's one of those things where you tell a very specific story. And the question is, not unlike Dunkirk, does this warrant an entire movie? And, you know, not unlike Dunkirk, does this warrant the character? Where's the character development? It's really about the incident and not necessarily about the characters.
Oh.
And that's what's interesting. Anyway, we'll talk about that later.
So thumbs up on all four of those movies.
Thumbs up for me on all four. You see all four. I got nothing bad to say about all of them, any of them.
Hey, I got some catching up to do then.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You can't wait to get him on your phone. Especially Dunkirk. Especially Dunkirk. And Dunkirk and Apes, please try to see in the theater.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The other two, you know, you might be able to wait, but Dunkirk and Apes, man.
Yeah.
All right. So, look, back to tech news. Let's start with tech news now that we're like an hour into the show.
Thank you.
we just did the movie corner. We did the popcorn talk right now. Now that we're, back to tech news, HBO has been hacked, you know, by some hackers, and they sent this ransom video to them, and they said they got Game of Thrones, they've got Insecure, they got Ballers, they got all these different shows, and they have the audacity to send out a ransom note video,
yeah.
And it was cold because it was set to Game of Thrones, the music.
Right.
That's like, yeah, I don't know. So I watched the video, I read it. I don't know. If I was an executive HBO, I'd be filled with rage. But
of course,
I don't know. What do they do?
Hey, I mean,
do you pay them?
I think you pay them. I mean, because the blowback of something this large, you're talking about. I mean, they say it's a terabyte and a half of content, and not just content, but like sensitive information,
emails, back and forth, like, scripts.
They're even alluding to them being, you know, going through some tax evasive type of things with some of their financial documents, like, you know, saying they only made a certain amount fiscally and then actually potentially might have made more. So they're saying that the blowback could be, you know, years and years if they don't pay. And so I read the letter. It's just, I mean, these guys are highly sophisticated to be able to do that, number one. And then number two, like, pretty bold to be like, you know what? Hey, we don't do this for money. We don't do this for, you know, for any financial gain. Like, we do this because we can.
Right.
And we want...
but pay me.
But pay me. I know, exactly. Exactly. Pay me and I'll keep my mouth shut. But I think it's pretty incredible that a company... I mean, we talk about this all the time. We're in a hacking ecosystem. You know, no one's safe. So HBO, Sony, whoever it is, Target, no one's safe. You know,
I could not agree more. It's scary times, and I don't know what this means to larger things. I don't know when people start setting their sights on other things other than media companies. And I guess there may be that may be happening now that just not made public. You know, who knows what's happening inside governments, inside walls of, I mean, like, we're not talking about just federal government. What about like state governments? What about like people hacking, you know, California or hacking, you know,
people are hacking everything.
Texas. Like,
I have a friend that works for a water company in a different state, and he was just telling me they just got hacked. So I'm sure that, like you said, a lot of that stuff they keep under the radar and they don't necessarily publicize it, but I think people are getting hacked left and right, man.
Yeah,
left and right.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see how this all plays out. But it's scary times, though. Scary times, because I think that we're just at the tip of the spear of the whole hacking culture and what's going to happen. We haven't had a real hacking disaster. I mean, we've been hinted at it with the election. Obviously, if you didn't do with
election, what would be considered a disaster then?
You know, power grids, you know, nuclear, you know, mostly like power grids hacking, food supplies, water, like water's not clean, like just really, really disruptive things that we depend on a day to day basis. Traffic light systems, just, you know, they just, when they come in and hack your power grid. And all your traffic.
Hey, that's next.
And then you have to deploy all of your municipal resources to be able to direct traffic and keep things safe. And then, well, it was robbing banks somewhere else, or, you know, looting. I mean, it's all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, that I've seen in every heist movie or GTA 5 that I've seen. That seems plausible.
Yeah.
So what, you know, who knows? Don't go mean to go Die Hard 2 on you. You know, airports. You know, air traffic control, which is already like, I mean, air traffic control, they thread needles every single airport, every single day. If you talk to, like, you see what happens at LAX and JFK and Heathrow and how ridiculous that is, how intricate that is.
Yeah.
Can you imagine just going down?
Absolutely.
I mean, with planes in the air, I don't even want to think about it. So, I don't know. It's scary. So, we'll see. I'm not going to fly, drink any water, or get out of here.
Lock myself in my room.
In the meantime. But speaking of which, I'll go there. But there's a thing at Google. So there's this one cat. I don't know if this is, it's kind of, I just want to touch this a little bit. This one Google engineer spoke out like about this anti-diversity, saying basically, he wrote this manifesto saying basically, you know, the reason women, because Google's been under fire for having, maybe systematically paying women less than their men,
yep,
engineers and executives. And one engineer is like, yo, it's because, man, it's just because they're women. And he had a whole basically anti-diversity screed about why this is.
Yeah.
And why this is interesting is this brings up the debate of, you know, can he be allowed to speak his mind? I mean, if he's a different political,
of course he
you
can.
Know, yeah, you know, realm, or if he's like, if he wants to talk about Trump and how Trump is great,
of course he can.
A manifesto, but he was fired.
Yeah, you can speak your mind, but there's always going to be consequences.
Right.
Like, okay. I mean, that's for you to decide.
Right.
If you're willing to accept whatever consequences that may come. But I think what he said was highly disrespectful and insensitive.
Yep.
And it just shows the state of mind that not only did we find in Silicon Valley and a lot of these tech companies, but what we find just in our society and culture in general, in mass. Like, it's a man's world, like James Brown said.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate that we still have to have this type of shift of power or balance correction in 2017. Like, just like we have a North and South Pole, they're you know, very different in nature, even though they're very similar in nature, but they're North and South Pole for a reason, to keep the balance of the earth. Right. And so we have women, we have men, and we have a diversity of how people engage, and that should be all celebrated and accepted.
Yep.
And it's not in the ranks of Google, it's not in the ranks of Uber, it's not in the ranks of a lot of these tech companies. So I'm glad that, you know, there's more conversation and discussion and more shakeup,
yep,
of some of these, I guess, patriarchal men that are just not on point.
Well, Google's whole thing is like do no evil, but like whatever. And I think that are don't do evil. So I think they're part of their entire brand is built on the creed of we're going to do the right thing.
Correct.
At all points. So that's just good to know. You know, the iPhone 8, moving on, iPhone 8's about to drop. And there's rumors that it may not be what we think it's going to be. There's some rumors that Apple is having trouble manufacturing this new version of this glass and this new screen, mm-hmm, that is going to make the iPhone 8 the iPhone 8, meaning it's supposed to be a fully larger screen that we see in our iPhone Plus. So there's a rumor that Apple may try to do a little bait and switch and throw out a couple iPhone 7S's on us, you know, with just a couple little modifications to buy themselves a little more time to get the iPhone 8 out. That sounds about right, but what do you think of that? Do you think that's a possibility?
I think that's what Apple has always done. They've always, you know, kind of pivoted that way. But I think now, especially because the mobile landscape is changing, because Samsung is such a major player, and I mean, just the lore of Apple is not the same as it was when Steve Jobs was around. It's been declining, and it's been declining with a few of their launches, like the Apple Watch. So I think that they have to do this in a way to still maintain relevancy. But you're talking about a phone that's going to cost over $1,000. That's, I mean, never been really done.
$1,200.
Never done before. Like, what is this phone going to do that's going to, you know, make me want to put up a G plus of my money? You know what I'm saying? Because what, it has a screen that has deeper, richer blacks and colors? No. Like, you have to give me something more.
You can charge it on your...
Oh, okay. But, I mean, you talk about rumors. Like, they're even saying that the software elements that they've developed for that type of technology to be able to charge it wirelessly, the software is not even up to speed. It's not even... It's like, it's buggy. And right. So that may not even be a part of the launch, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
I don't know, man. I think...
Are you going to wait for the second generation of the iPhone 8s? Are you just going to hold off? Are you just going to go?
I'm pretty happy with my 7 Plus. You know what I'm saying?
I'm very happy with my 7 Plus, but I was happy with my 7 too.
Unless they're doing something.
I was happy with my 6S too.
Unless they're doing something pretty amazing. Like, I have no reason to get the new one. Like, I'm not shelling out $1,000 because it has a
1200.
Two more megapixels in the camera. Like, come on, dog. Mm-mm.
1200. More screen room.
Okay.
Glass back.
Okay. super hustling. But I think the more interesting story is that how, like, they're trying to shift over into the OLED glass, right?
Yeah.
Where you have, like I said, deeper colors, you know, richer blacks and all that stuff.
But also saves power, right?
And it saves power. Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's not, when it's black, it's not, like, sucking power right now when it's off like it is right now. My phone's off, but it's still sucking power.
But the story is that Samsung... holds the highest market share of developing that technology. And Samsung is arch enemy to Apple. So it's like, how is Apple going to get around Samsung to be able to produce these phones in mass? That's the question.
Yeah. And I think that maybe that's part of the whole stall tactic. Maybe they got to figure out how they can, you know, give Apple. I mean, Apple's got money in R&D. I mean, look, this stuff is proprietary, but it's not like, I mean, you know, eventually someone's going to figure out how to do the same thing. Just like, I mean, bad example, but it's like North Korea eventually will figure out how to make a nuclear weapon. Like, we don't hold the patent on nuclear ICBMs. Like, people will figure the shit out if you give them enough time and resources. So maybe Apple will figure it out.
Yeah, but we're talking about figuring it out in pre-launch, though. You have to have the infrastructure to be able to develop 100 million pieces of whatever goes into that technology.
That's why they have to be able to sell you the iPhone 7S.
Hey. And that's why I think it's going to be a major fail unless they have something else that they're going to launch that hasn't been leaked or they're not, you know, reported.
September is like 15 days away. September is right around the corner.
I don't feel the excitement.
I don't know.
I don't feel the excitement. Oh, the new Apple Watch is releasing too. Like that's what you're going with? Like, no.
I'm just waiting for you to get the Apple Watch right. Hopefully.
Good luck with that.
Drop that price point down to $200.
To $5.
Drop it down to $100.
Yeah.
I'm still holding out. I'm still holding out for the Apple Watch to be good. I really want it to be good.
Hey, but what, how long has it been? 3 years?
It's been 3 years. 3 years. Okay. All right. That being said, well, let me switch over to our friends over at Blue Apron, because Blue Apron is in fact a better way to cook, as they say, because Blue Apron is a company that allows you to make sort of restaurant quality and chef quality ingredients in your own home. You don't have to be a chef to know how to do this stuff. You don't have to be a master cook. You don't even have to be a good home cook. All you have to be able to do is learn how to follow instructions. And you don't have to go shopping at the farmer's market and looking at stuff and picking up stuff and going through Whole Foods or Irwan, like we have in LA. You don't have Irwan everywhere else in the country. But you just have to learn how to go to a box outside your house, open it up, and follow instructions, which most of us can do. Here's how it works. Blue Apron has partnerships with over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the country. They got sustainably sourced seafood. They got sort of organically grown beef and chicken. The produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. So they're ahead of the curve on the technology in terms of how they get their food. But also their menus. They have these amazing, amazing, beautiful menus that you come to you and they teach you how to cook these wonderful meals, like basil chicken pesto with summer vegetable panzanella, sauteed shrimp and green beans and globe tomatoes, spinach and orzo pasta, whole grain pasta, summer vegetables and heirloom tomatoes, even a meatball pizza with mozzarella cheese and charm tomatoes. I don't know what a charm tomato is. You ever heard of charm tomato?
Mm-mm.
I don't know what a charm tomato is. Whatever.
That's fancy.
It is.
That's fancy.
I'm sure it's delicious. What this is Blue Apron. You sign up for Blue Apron. It comes right to your crib. You can order it. You can eat it. It's affordable. You can get these things for less than $10 per person per meal. But here's what you're gonna do. You can check out this week's menu for free, and the first three meals for free with free shipping. Even just go to blueapron.com/geek. That's blueapron.com/geek, as in geek nerd taste. Geek nerd tech. That's blueapron.com/geek. It's Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hey, that sounds fantastic.
That's what it is. So, we were talking about airplanes earlier. There's a push to make these pilotless airplanes that could be, you know, that'll help. And pilotless airplanes is something that's been talked about, which is obviously capable now with the drone technology. That's been capable, but there's also these airplanes that everyone can fly, which are these like sort of home drone things, which are these octocopters, which two people can sit in. And these people who are manufacturing are saying like they're pretty close to getting the FAA to approve these things because they're pretty safe. They're saying if drones are safe, and drones have all the, you know, all the fail safes of backup batteries and GPS. They said they have this gas powered octocopter, which you can sit with, and it's gas powered. But if you run out of gas, you got a full 5 minutes of lithium battery that'll get you where you need to go and land safely. And if that fails, you got a parachute.
Okay.
The thing's gonna parachute. It'll if that fails, then I don't know.
You might, yeah, then you're out of here.
Make it. But, you know, it's also going to have all the same technology the drones have, since, you know, run into stuff, you know, and be running into things. But they say a 16-year-old can fly it even. It's the same thing as, you know, just a stick up, down, left, right. And they seem to think that this is going to be the wave of the future. They're working with FAA now, and also they're making these things autonomous as well. And I don't know. What do you think of this?
I mean, I definitely think that it has the potential to be the wave of the future. I mean, we have to figure out, you know, I think there's some steps that come before that. Like, drones need to be more in the marketplace that aren't manned first. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so I think, you know, once we see more of a proliferation of that and more of a saturation of that, then this will emerge further. But in terms of like unmanned transportation, we discuss it all the time. It's going to start with transportation of goods. And I think that when we look at air flight and not having pilots in the cockpit for that, like, it makes more sense. Like, hey, you have a full, you know, full plane full of goods, you don't need necessarily a pilot. And how much money that's going to save, you know, the airline, how much, you know, training costs that you'll be able to save. It's the more infrastructure that you'll be able to provide to have more planes out there. And so they were saying that statistically, like, all the money that you have to go into training a pilot, and then for each plane you have to have like 10 pilots in rotation, and each of those pilots obviously have a salary, you have to pay for all, you know, the medical insurance and all that. So they're able to have all that gone would obviously, you know, provide more money for the airline or whatever. And so then moving that over to more commercial usages, hey, maybe that savings will trickle down to the actual consumer who's, you know, buying the ticket. So I think both drone technology and, you know, unmanned, you know, planes that fly, you know, I think that's definitely in the near future. And we see it already with cars. We're going to see it with, you know, big rigs on the road, and we'll see it in the air. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's great.
Good. Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. I mean, we're getting closer and closer to Blade Runner, Minority Report situation. Yeah. I'm all for it. I would definitely get these. I would get in.
Yeah,
I would get in one of these things. I feel like there's enough fail safes and computers fail safes. And hey, run out of gas, the battery will get me down. If I don't mind parachuting down, you know, if I got a parachute down, I'm fine. So I'll do it. To that point, this is a story that you like. Airlines are now giving your face to the government now. So some of these airlines, especially JetBlue, have this new facial recognition software that helps you get through, you know, all your check-ins, you know, quicker and faster, and they store your, you know, the biometric information in your face and your retina information, and it recognizes you, it gets through. I do this. I signed up for that thing, Blue, which has in some airports, like 7 or 8 airports, you put your fingerprint in, you zip right through. I'm a part of that. I think every time I put my fingerprint down, I'm like, uh-oh. And it says here, the JetBlue thing keeps you for up to 14 days in the system, and now... The, you know, U.S. Home Security, the Department of Homeland Security, and others are trying to get this database to be able to use a part of their database to be able to, you know, allegedly, you know, to keep us safe. But also, who knows what for?
Yeah, I'm not with it. I'm not with it. The usage.
tell the people why it's not a good thing.
I mean, I think this is Big Brother times 10. You know what I'm saying? So you're use my imagery. Who knows for what purposes? It could be for marketing, so you can make money off my imagery. And then also, who knows who you're really giving that information to? Like, I don't know how that could be used. And so I think it does not hacked. Or even hacked. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it serves the customer well. Like, it doesn't make me feel safer. It doesn't make me feel comfortable. I want to know who's watching me. I want to know when they're watching me. I don't want to be able to say, okay, I walk through an area and you're capturing all this imagery. Who knows? You might even be recording what a conversation I'm having with you.
Yeah,
like that's all bad for me.
Yeah,
I'm all with it.
Yeah, it's definitely problematic. I mean, it comes, all these things all come, you know, through the lens of like we're just trying to make things easier for the consumer and we're trying to make things better for the end user. But ultimately, some of this stuff gets to be. There's also a dark side to all of it. So it's just the way of those things.
I think this is definitely a Trump thing that he's pushing. I mean, I think it was $1 billion he mandated for, you know, this type of technology to be developed.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think that it has a great usage, but I don't think it should be used in this fashion as it relates to, you know, me walking through an airport. I think it is a better way, you know, it's a happy medium.
I agree wholeheartedly. All right, so let me get to these last two things. You know, Uber's been under fire a lot. and this is ties in right nicely with jobs. You know, Uber's been under fire a lot with their CEO. They've ousted their CEO, your boy Travis. They've been they vowed to maybe find a female CEO, and they got some pretty high profile candidates. Unfortunately, they're all turning them down. Right. Every woman that they've gone after, high profile woman of other tech companies, they've looked at it and they're like, thanks Uber, but no thanks. And you know, do you think, I'm wondering what this is about. Is this just about like Uber's so effed up, I don't want to be part of this culture? Is it like they evaluate where Uber is and where it's going and be like, nah, I don't want to right this ship? I mean, why are people and mostly these women backing away from Uber? Do they know something we don't know, or is it just like not the right timing?
I mean, I think it's bad timing, and I think, you know, no person wants to be the cleanup crew. You know, no person wants to be the second hand. You know, like I feel that that's what they were saying in the article, that a lot of even people of color and women that get into these top executive positions are getting those positions because of a problem that happened to the company, and so not because they're the first choice, not because not because it was on an incline, it was because it was on a decline. Exactly, and it's definitely PR to help them make them seem more inclusive and yada yada.
We got a woman now. We got a black person now.
Exactly. And you look at it statistically, you know, with the Fortune 500 companies, 10% of them are run by women. 10% of 500 is what? Five? Well, 50.
50.
You know, that's terrible. That's a terrible stat, you know? And so I feel strategically for those women to pass up on this opportunity, quote unquote. I think it's smart for them, because who knows what people will say if Uber continues to decline? They'll blame it on the woman CEO. Well, look, she couldn't do it. Right. See, I think it's smart for them to pull back and make a better assessment for themselves, and that's clearly why it is. Or maybe there's more crap underneath, you know, the Uber lens than we have yet to see. So speaking of jobs, though, I want to shout out a great company, Dice. And Dice is a leading tech career hub, a champion for the technology professional, and a citizen of the tech community. They provide awesome career opportunities, insights, and advice. They have over 70,000 tech jobs on Dice, and literally it's the best place to be seen and heard. And so if you're ever wondering about your next, you know, role, how much, you know, you think you should be getting paid, Dice can provide the insight and guidance about what direction you should be moving in based on what skill sets you have, your experience, and even more dope, your location. So it centers in on exactly where you are, and it pairs you up based on your skills and what opportunities are out there. And not just that, it challenges you. It'll even show you what skills you need to develop further to be able to make the move and jump into what career path that you really, really want. So Dice has been connecting tech pros with job opportunities for over 20 years. They're a full-blown career hub. They deliver the tools and resources you need to manage your career. Like I said earlier, over 70,000 tech jobs, ranging from software development to project management. The whole gamut is very diverse. Tremendous amounts of insights around the job market and skills that are hot. And they also tell you which ones are kind of like cooling off. They provide salary reports and tools to fully understand how you stack up and how you compete against others. But Dice is definitely your advocate for navigating your career. Whether that means you finding, you know, the next job or getting your next pay raise or informing your next career move, Dice is the place. And you can learn more about Dice at dice.com/canyouhackit. Once again, that's dice.com/canyouhackit. Hack your career with Dice.
Dice. Yep. And maybe they can find some Uber CEOs through Dice as well. I don't know.
Good luck.
Last couple things. Disney is about to it just inked a new deal with Netflix a year ago, and Netflix is excited to get all these new Disney movies and Disney content. But now Disney's like, yeah, that's over. We're gonna launch our own service. Disney's out. Yeah. They have their own service they're launching in 2018 or 2019 rather. And I mean, this is kind of not really a surprise because everyone's trying to launch their own service. But what does this mean for Netflix? Is this a big blow to Netflix, or is this just another cost of doing business?
I definitely think it's certainly a blow to Netflix. I mean, to be able to have a partnership with Disney, I mean, because you got to think, you know, Netflix is trying to at least bring in the kid demographic, and they're not really they don't really have an animation department like that. So to be able to have that type of legacy content on their platform, or even the newer stuff, I think it was a win for Netflix because that gives incentives for families to sign up for Netflix. Hey, we have kids, and hey, here's an iPad, kid, go watch Netflix. So pull that out, you know, and now Disney has their own stream for that. Like, they might lose some money, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously Netflix will continue to develop original programming, and maybe some of that will be more animation or more kid-friendly content. I mean, they have. Well, I don't know if they have, but allegedly they have the money to do it. Because
right.
A lot of people say Netflix is close to bankruptcy, close to being bankrupt, I mean. But I think this is a great move for Disney.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, a great move for Disney. It's also a thing where, you know, Disney is also in the process of solving another problem of theirs, which is ESPN. They're now going to be launched a streaming service for ESPN that will help them solve a lot of their thing with the subscription, the loss of subscription, and people complaining about the cost of ESPN. It allows them to separate from some of these cable companies to do like a subscription model with their ESPN streaming, and then maybe jack up some of those prices to get some of those revenues back up if people really want ESPN, assuming they can come up with some good content other than just, you know, games. So I think it's a great strategy for Disney. It just makes me wonder is how if they're going to keep it as one powerful Disney thing, are they going to split it further, have a Marvel streaming service, a Lucasfilm streaming service? Are they going to all keep it as one powerful Disney?
I think they would have to keep it as one powerful.
Yeah.
Because the branch off with those, I think that would not do them the same to be able to have it all under the same banner.
Because Disney has so many properties, legacy properties, have the Pixar properties, Disney animation properties, Marvel, Lucasfilm. Film, you know, so it makes sense for them to keep it all under one roof. So interesting story to see how that develops. And let's see. Let me just switch over to a couple quick things. One, Dark Tower, a movie I didn't see. I was really worried about this film. I love my boy Idris. I love my boy McConaughey, but it just the trailer didn't look good. Didn't feel right. It didn't like nothing. Didn't feel right. It debuted really poorly, 18% of Rotten Tomatoes, didn't make any money. It's supposedly not just boring, just not good. Mm. That being said, they are still going ahead with building out the whole Dark Tower universe.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a Dark Tower TV show in the works. They're still talking about more movies. I mean, what do you think of this? Maybe they've committed wholeheartedly to this universe. And look, this is something that they've been trying to make for 20 plus years. Ron Howard was attached. J.J. Abrams was attached. But do you think this is a good idea to still continue with this world? What happens when you have a beloved book or beloved property that's a swing and a miss? I do agree. Yeah. It shouldn't die. Give someone else a chance to make it.
I think it's a bit harsh to say it's a swing and a miss. I mean, I think that they didn't get the numbers that they were expecting, but I don't think it was like a fail. I wouldn't go that far. I actually like the trailer.
Say it's a fail.
I like the trailer. I thought the trailer was pretty dope.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, them using this property in both film and TV, I think is smart. And having it sequenced in time, I think it gives an offering to, you know, different audiences. And they even said, like, regardless of if it's successful at the box office, we're still going to be able to, you know, continue the story. It's, you know, an eight part book. You know, it's a lot of story to be told. This is just kind of like the appetizer. And so, I mean, there's still more things that they can explore. And I think in TV format, in episodic format, I think they'll have more, I guess, clay to work with and then be able to spin it back to a film. I think it's smart.
Yeah.
I think it could be a property that grows. You know, the fan base can grow, and maybe the next time we see it in the box office, those numbers might be more appropriate.
One of the things that came out of the story, which I thought was really interesting, is Ron Howard and his sort of forward thinking. He's talking about back in 2001, how, you know, he talked about how, you know, if you look at all these eight books, some are very personalized stories and some are giant, sweeping, epic. And like some, if you look at this and reviewing this, like some of this lends itself to the big screen, some of it to the small screen, some of it to others. So he's like, why can't we just do these whole story on different platforms?
Totally.
This is back in 2001. People were like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And now we see that all the time. We see, you know, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., mm-hmm. you know, and it all kind of connects to one universe. We may see some of that with John Wick and some other properties. Mm-hmm. I think this is cool. It looks like Ron Howard was onto something, and I think that if they can make it work, let's do it, because we've seen it happen in the past. You know? I
definitely think they can make it work.
We can get out of here, but I just want to touch on this one last story we have, which is just making me mad. It's, you know, the Ivor Madison, formerly of MTV News, wrote this story about this sort of the shaming of Sasha and Malia, how, you know, you know, Sasha Malia out there being teenagers, doing her thing, going to Lollapalooza, kissing boys, and how, you know, mostly the right wing blogosphere and media are taking all these horrible pictures of them and then making them out to be making the Obamas out to be like horrible parents. Like, you got your kids out here running around, and it just seems so. Our take is how blatantly not only partisan, but like sort of racist it is to sort of the way that they're. The way it's a larger picture which we don't have time for, but it just talks about how we're doing the Obamas, how we're doing young women, how we're doing black women, and how the way they're being portrayed is unlike anything we see. Not even with Chelsea Clinton or even with Amy Carter, who got a lot of shit. What do you think of this?
I mean, I agree. I think that if the Obama daughters were not black, like it would be more sensitivity. It would be more.
I guess Bush twins.
more appropriate reverence for them. And so, I mean, I know that, you know, these girls are still young and they are exploring socially and they're doing stuff that maybe, you know, other I guess presidents' daughters or children have not done. And we're in a social media environment. A lot of their friends actually were the ones that were capturing the content. So it wasn't like they were. It's not like the news outlets were like following them TMZ style and catching them. Like they actually pulled stuff off, you know, some of their friends' Snapchats and stuff and other social media properties. So, I mean, but nonetheless, like I feel like there still should be, you know, a bottom line sense of respect and, you know, reverence that you have for, you know, the president's daughters. And let them live. They're young. You know what I'm saying? Like let them be teenagers. Just like, you know, you would let your own daughter or son be a teenager. And so the fact that
my daughter would never be at Lollapalooza.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that you could take an image and manufacture it. You can make it mean something that it's not, you know. And so I feel like there's a lot of that going on. And yeah, I think it's terrible.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting article by Ira Madison, who's a brother I like a lot. Check it out. I think it was on Mashable or Daily Beast. Something I can't remember. Anyway, that's all we got for this week. Anything else you want to mention?
Hey, I made it. I made it through. Nah, that's it.
Yeah, you're alive. Didn't pass out.
Man.
None of that happened. Congratulations. After a rough travel week. I got about, before we go, I want about 30 more minutes on Dunkirk.
Oh my God. No.
The beach. No, I'm kidding. Where can the people find you?
Oh my gosh. They can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. Where can they find you?
They can find me on the beach of Dunkirk,
right.
France, at Instagram or Twitter at Joel K. Braswell. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you guys next week. Bye.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.